Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, I'm Denny Somak, and this is The Rock Podcast. I'm a rock historian, producer, and best-selling author with thousands of interviews collected over the years. We just try and bring you the greatest stories and interviews as told by the artists themselves. On this episode, I'm very excited to welcome guitarist extraordinaire, Grammy Award winner, Eric Johnson, to The Rock Podcast. And this is a brand new interview. Now, full disclosure, I've known Eric for over 30 years. And in fact, I had a record label in the late 80s, early 90s called Cinema Records, distributed by Capitol EMI. And I heard a tape that was circulating around and absolutely blew me away. I found out that it was Eric Johnson and that he had recorded an album for Warner Brothers, but it had not sold very well. So Warner's dropped him. Their loss was my gain. I signed him to my label, and he recorded an album titled A Via Musicam. That album went double platinum, which means it sold over 2 million copies. And the track, Cliffs of Dover, won a Grammy for Best Rock Instrumental. So you're going to hear this recent conversation with Eric as he releases two new albums, The Book of Making and Yesterday Meets Today. Both were assembled during the lockdown when Eric went through his own archives and stumbled upon countless outtakes, demos, unfinished tracks, enough raw material to fill two albums, and it spans 25 years of ideas that's remained unfinished. At the end of the conversation, you can listen to an unreleased track that I dug out of my archives. More on that later. So here is Eric Johnson in conversation. So you're ready to go?
Sure, you bet.
This is exciting. I've never really had the chance to sit down and interview all this time. Oh, so well, I'm excited.
Thank you for doing this.
First of all, you've been a very busy guy during the lockdown. You got two new albums coming out. And you just released a second set of singles from them. Give me a little background. I know this is material that goes back, what, 20-some years?
Yeah.
So what, do you start going through the archives and
yeah.
What made you decide to pick this, that? What were the...
Well, I just came home in early 2020 when the lockdown happened and just nobody was playing together. So I just went to the tape closet and started pulling stuff out. And I found stuff that was completely finished, some stuff that was barely started, some halfway started, just in all manner of progression of, you know, finished and just started pulling out stuff that I liked. Some of it was on cassette and some of it was analog, some of it was digital. And some of it didn't, fidelity wise, was a little dicey, but we did our best to try to EQ it and make it sound okay. And then I cut about 7 new tunes for the record as well.
What band did you use for the new stuff?
The new stuff was predominantly Roscoe Beck and Tom Breckline, although there was one cut that Kevin Hall played drums on.
Right.
And yeah.
Okay. So I notice some of the songs I recognize because I've seen you do them live over the years, like Sitting on Top of the World. I remember 25 years ago seeing you play that.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Town Hall in New York, I saw you.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So what made you decide to put that one on? Because that's a cover, obviously. There's a few covers on here.
Yeah, I had that leftover. And there's actually a third record that's going to come out when you buy both records, and it's an outtake record. So there's a second version of Sitting on Top of the World on that.
Yeah, talk about that, because you get that. Do you pre-order the record? You get a key or something? Explain how that works.
On like the cue thing, the two records match up for the thing, and then you get a free download of the third outtake record.
Whose idea was that?
Well, I had the outtake record, and I wasn't sure what to do with it, and so Blue Elan had that idea to do that.
So it comes out, what, in 2 weeks officially?
Yeah, on the 29th, I think.
Yeah. Like that. Now, you're not going to get a chance to tour until your Treasure Tour, correct? Which is next year?
Right, right.
So what are you going to do between now and then? You going to do any dates at all locally? Or?
Well, I'm doing an acoustic show this Thursday, actually, downtown at the State Theater.
Right.
I've been writing some, I got about six new acoustic pieces I've written. So I've just been working on that.
I mean, how much stuff do you have in your vaults?
Oh, there's still more. You know, I guess I've always kind of recorded two records every time I record one record. And then I just decide what I want to put out and what I don't. And sometimes I think that decision is kind of filtered through my own subjective feelings and doesn't necessarily mean something's better or worse. But there's still stuff in there.
Now, knowing your history, it seems like you worked on these records a little bit faster than you've worked on records in the past, even though a lot of it was already done. Has your outlook on getting material done changed over the years? Because I know you used to take forever to do stuff. I don't mean that in a negative way.
Yeah. I mean, I still try to spend time to make it where I think it's good, but I think there's a point of diminishing return where you can just go too far, and I'm kind of trying to learn that.
Is there any specific meaning behind these titles, The Book of Making?
Oh, my friend Vince came up with the title, The Book of Making, and I thought it was kind of interesting because it kind of insinuates kind of scrapbook, but you know, a journal or whatever, you know, so it kind of shows something that was started, but maybe finished later or whatever. And then Yesterday Meets Today, it was that was one of the new tunes I recorded. And I just thought it kind of fit the premise of the record, you know, it meets today's stuff with old stuff.
Hmm. So you mentioned Vince, is that Vince Mariani?
Yes.
And didn't he pass away recently?
He passed away a couple months ago.
He had a major influence on you. Tell me about that.
Big time. Yeah. He co-wrote Desert Rose with me, and he wrote Lonely in the Night. And he named a lot of my songs. Like, he came up with the name Manhattan. He came up with Cliffs of Dover, came up with a lot of the trademark. He came up with that title, and he came up with the font for Avia Musicom, and he wrote the liner notes for a couple of the records, and he was a very close friend of mine.
It was sort of your mentor, would you say?
I'd say so, because I met him when I was 13, and he kind of really helped turn my life around.
Yeah, now, he's a drummer, right?
He is a drummer, singer, songwriter.
So was he in your first band?
Yeah, it was actually his band. It was called Mariani, and I played guitar in it when I was 15.
Right. Yeah. They did one album officially, or was that?
We did one album that never came out. There was just 100 promo records made, which show up on the internet every once in a while.
Yeah.
And we played shows around Texas and stuff.
So, some of the other songs on here. Talk about some of the others, your favorites. on either of these albums?
I like Soundtrack Life. I like that song. I think it's kind of pretty much kind of a trademark kind of what I do. You know, it's kind of sounds like what I do mostly. And I like Love Will Never Say Goodbye just because it's a little different, you know, right. For me.
Tell me about Move On Over, because that was, I think, taken from a live recording originally. And you tell me how that
was. It was a live Alien Love Child recording. Right. Yeah, that was one. I didn't even do anything to that but put it out. That was complete. Even the mix, it was a rough mix that Richard Mullen did. And I just put the song out.
For those that don't know, Richard Mullen has worked with you on many of your other records. He also passed away a few years ago, correct?
Yes, yeah. And he worked on the first several Stevie Ray records and very instrumental in getting Stevie's thing going.
He mixed a lot of your live sound too, I remember.
He mixed live sound and mixed Venus Isle. He did that record. He did a lot of the records. Actually, everything after IV Musicom, he mixed while he was alive.
Yeah, amazing guy, really.
Yeah,
amazing guy. Talented.
Yeah.
So have you been yourself had a chance to see any shows? I know there haven't been too many lately, but anybody that you've seen or had a chance to go out and see?
No, I haven't really been to any live shows recently.
I know you get asked quite a bit to play on other people's records. Have you done any playing on anybody's? Because you can do that from anywhere, right?
Yeah, I've done a number of them that people just send me tracks and I'll just play a guitar track on it or whatever, which has been kind of fun to do.
Okay. Is there anybody that you'd like to work with that you haven't heard from yet?
Jeez, I love working with anybody.
Well, they have to be a great player for you to.
Oh, well,
virtuosos always look for other virtuosos.
I don't know. I like it all. I mean, I always huge Stevie Wonder fan. I'd love to work with him.
I want to just go back here. Yesterday Meets Today. Is that more just by the title? Is that more older or they're both?
That's a brand new tune.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
So are most of the stuff on that record? Newer stuff?
That title track is a brand new tune.
Right.
Let's see. I'd have to Farewell For Now or Until We Meet Again or whatever the last track is. That's a brand new track. JVZ is a brand new track. Dorsey's Takes a Day Off is a brand new track. And the others might be older tracks. Yeah.
Okay. So I know you mentioned the guys that you were working on these tracks. Are there any one-off guests on any of these tracks?
Ariel sang on the Book of Making on the song To Be Alive.
Yeah. I saw her open for you last time I saw you.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She writes some of your lyrics.
Yeah. She wrote the lyrics to Be Alive.
She's good. And she has her own thing. In addition, right? She performs because I saw her open for you.
Yeah. She does her own thing. Yeah.
How are things in Austin?
Oh, hot, very hot. It's over 100 degrees every day.
Yeah. And it's amazing. I mean, the city's becoming so big population wise and industry moving in. You've noticed the changes over the years.
It's just unbelievable. It's not even the same place that it was. No. Have you been here recently?
I have not been there in maybe 10, 15 years.
Okay.
But I was, you know, there plenty of times before that, but I just keep reading and seeing people talk about it. And it's just amazing.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So I'm probably not going to get a chance to see you till you come back to Florida. Cause that's where I'm living now.
Oh, you live in Florida.
Okay. Yeah. Right outside of Fort Lauderdale. So I'll see you at the Fort Lauderdale show.
How do you like it?
I love it.
Okay.
I love it. It's, I mean, better than Philadelphia right now. That's for sure.
Okay.
When's the last time you were, I know this is obviously pre-lockdown, but when's the last time you played over in Europe or played over in Japan?
Oh, it's been over 10 years, actually. It's been a long time.
So are you looking to get back there?
Yeah, actually, Europe, maybe not quite 10 years, but Japan, it has been. Yeah, I'd like to. Yeah, that'd be nice.
Okay. Now, tell me about these mini lessons that you released. What's the story behind that? And you're looking for people to download it and make a donation. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, that was during COVID. I was just trying to think of something I could do to maybe help people's technique a little bit and maybe get them to donate money to the food bank.
Yeah. How's that going so far?
Oh, it was good. It went real well during all the COVID thing. I think they're still up now, so people can still see them.
Yeah, but they can.
Yeah, I was doing them all through the pandemic. Yeah.
Now you can go to them and you can buy them individually, correct?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
That ought to do real well for you. I mean, if people, I'm sure there's some people that don't know. I mean, you have track record of the best selling instructional videos of all time.
They did pretty well. Yeah, they did.
Are all your original instructional videos still in print?
I think the first two aren't, but I haven't seen them lately. They came out so long ago on VHS.
Right. I have the VHS, yeah.
I don't know if they're still available or not, but I think there are ways people can get them. I think that they might be downloadable. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you've done live concerts, Austin City Limits. How many times have you done that? More than anybody, I think, right?
I think four times.
Any plans to do any other, any of those or any other television things?
Well, we're talking about maybe doing a video show of an acoustic set, but I haven't got formulated it quite yet. But yeah,
Would you like to do that in Austin or?
Probably. Yeah. Do some studio with live guests and stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Now I notice also, you're on the cover of the new Guitar Player. It's the, 25th anniversary of G3. Right. How did that originally come about?
Joe called and asked if we wanted to do this, thing with the three of us. And that was, 25 years ago. And we did several tours together and it was real successful. And then they just wanted to commemorate the 25th anniversary. So they had us do that article. And there's talk of maybe doing some shows in 2024.
Wow, that'd be something, huh?
Yeah.
Tell me about some of the guitars. I know some of your guitars are available, commemorative. Tell me what's happening with your guitars, because you're the guitar guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's three models that are the four models actually that are available with Fender. And the latest one is a replication of my original 54 Strat Virginia. And that's probably my favorite one that's being made. And I actually use one. I use one of the brand new ones and I like it.
Are those limited edition? They only available for a period of time?
There's custom shop limited edition, or you can get the production version, whichever one you prefer.
So let me ask you a silly question, but what's it like when you go to the Fender factory? Do they all go, wow, this is going to be great? Or do you go, oh, I can't believe I'm here?
Oh, it's pretty amazing. It's huge. And there's so much going on. And I think they see people all the time, so it's no big deal, but it's pretty interesting to see how that works. And it's in different places. The part of it's in Corona, part of it's in Hollywood, and it's kind of spread out a little bit, but it's pretty interesting.
You ever go to the Martin Guitar Factory?
I haven't. I'd love to tour it sometime.
Because that's right near my hometown. I've been there a number of times, Nazareth.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a really cool place. Everybody there has worked there like for life.
Oh, wow. That's great. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, well, you should. I think, next time you play Philly or Harrisburg, you should be able to get a trip in there, a side trip.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd love to do that.
So let me get this straight now. The tour for next year starts, what, in March or February?
February, I think.
February. And you're going to be playing all the dates that you missed. You're making them all up.
Yeah.
And then you added some, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And mostly theaters, some clubs.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans to play any Any concerts or multi-artist things? I know you a couple of times you did the Crossroads thing.
Yeah, no plans right now, but I'd love to if something comes up.
Yeah, what'd you like about doing the Crossroads festivals?
Oh, it was it's cool. I was glad to be there. I didn't really get a chance to be involved in it too much, but it was nice to be part of it.
Well, I'll tell you, James Young from Styx is a very good friend of mine, and he told me he was excited to see you.
Oh, really?
I don't remember which one it was, but I don't know if you remember meeting him. But he loved seeing you. He was.
I think some of the members of Styx live in Austin, don't they?
That's possible. JY lives in Chicago, and I think Tommy lives in LA, but I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
So some of your favorite guitar players, obviously, Clapton, Beck. What do you think of some of the latest stuff they've been doing?
Oh, I think it's great. Beck just released a new record. It's pretty amazing.
Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you, because I know that Jeff Beck was originally going to appear on, was it Venus Isle?
Yeah.
That didn't work out. Any chance that something could happen and that may eventually come to fruition?
Oh, I'd love to. I'd be honored any day for him to play on a song. That'd be great.
Who are some of your other favorite guitar players?
Oh, you know, from the past, John McLaughlin, Chet Atkins,
right.
Wes Montgomery, Hendrix. I like Julian Lange. I think he's really cool. Bill Frisell is really great. Ted Green, Doyle Dykes.
Right.
Tommy Emmanuel.
Now, you're, I know from talking to various people over the years, and I'll mention them in a minute because I want to know what your take is, but other guitar players have always sang your praises. I'm friends with Jeff Baxter. He was an early supporter of yours, right?
He was, yeah. He really helped get things going.
How did you first meet him?
I don't know. I think he heard some of my demo tapes, and he called me up and asked me if I wanted to do a recording session in the studio. So we went out to LA and worked together.
He's out doing a tour now because he has an album out finally. His own album just came out, and he was at the Iridium recently. He's just doing sporadic dates around the place.
Oh, how cool.
So Steve Morris is another one of your big promoters.
Yeah.
Where did you run into him? Do you remember?
Well, I used to see him with the Dixie Dregs.
Mm-hmm.
Back when Electromagnets were touring around. We kind of were running in the same circles, and I was just amazed at how great he was and how great the Dixie Dregs were.
Yeah, he's still talking. I saw an interview with him not too long ago, and he mentioned you again. So he's mentioning you. But of course, the big one is Prince. How did that come about? Because he helped you get the deal at Warner Brothers, didn't he?
Well, supposedly, but I don't know. I never talked to him or substantiated that, but that's what I'm told happened. Yeah.
So you never met him?
Never did.
Amazing. But he obviously heard or saw you somewhere.
Well, that's what people say. I don't know.
So let's get back to a couple of things. I know I've never asked you this, and I sort of knew it, but I finally saw it somewhere. Where you feel that Cliffs of Dover just came to you one day? Was it in a dream? Or?
Well, I just think that it was an easy song to write. And so I think it kind of just, it fell into place really easily. I didn't have to strain real hard to write it. It took a while to fill in all the little nuances of it, but basically the whole tune kind of came to me just very quickly.
That came to you though, like it was the early 80s, right? It was years before you got a chance to, what was holding you back from getting the final version? You just weren't happy with it?
Well, we considered putting it on Tones, but it was decided that, the producer decided he didn't want to put it on. And, I guess we didn't get a good enough take of it or something.
Big mistake on his part.
Yeah, it might, but it all worked out, I guess.
Yeah, it did. It did. Yeah. So in your free time that you have, and I know you have a studio in your place. So how much time do you spend in the studio just screwing around?
Well, I was spending a lot of time, but lately I've been spending less time. I've been trying to just kind of rebalance things and stuff. And I'm kind of taking a break this year a little bit from it all.
Well-deserved break, I would imagine.
I hope so, yeah.
So you said you already have some ideas for the next album. Have you started working on that? Or is that going to be another collection?
I have a handful of new acoustic pieces, and I also have a handful of songs I'm writing for like a straight up blues rock record.
Really?
I'd like to cut.
Is that going to be all original stuff? Are you going to do some standards?
I might do some standards, but mostly all original.
Any John Lee Hooker covers on there?
No, but there's borrowing heavily from him.
Yeah. Did you ever see him live?
No, I wish I could have.
Which blues players did you get a chance to see over the years? Did you get a chance to see any of Muddy Waters?
No, I saw Albert King and Albert Collins, and of course B.B. King a bunch of times. I saw Freddie King a couple times.
All the Kings, right? You've seen all the Kings.
Yeah.
About I know a lot of people cite Freddie King. What was it about his style? What was? Because I know Clapton talks about.
Yeah, he was just so animated and so kind of free and kind of he had such his own style, but it was so fiery and exploratory, and he was amazing. I got to meet him actually once.
Yeah.
But I was just a young kid.
And of course, you know, B.B. King, you toured with. I saw that tour. That was great. He was that was an amazing tour, the two of you together.
Yeah, he was wonderful. Such a fine gentleman.
Do you ever see Buddy Guy?
Oh yeah, many times. Played many shows with him.
You play his place in Chicago?
I have. I've jammed there and stuff. Yeah.
Will that be not the next record, but the one after if you do the blues thing?
It could be the next one. I guess I'm just going to keep writing these acoustic things and see how they go, kind of figure it out.
So you're one of those, there's a few, but you're obviously one of those guitar guys. And I noticed, especially the shows that I've seen and, you know, even when I was in Europe and saw you there, I mean, so many guitar players come to your show. When they get a chance to talk to you, what kinds of questions do they ask?
Oh, you know, sometimes it's just visiting and stuff, and I try to ask them what they're up to, but sometimes they want to know where I got my chord ideas from, which is, you know, kind of like Ted Green kind of stuff. That's where a lot of the ideas came from.
Yeah, so you don't keep it a secret, you tell them?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I saw a recent list, Joe Bonamassa, 10 greatest guitar players, and he had you as number 2 behind Eric Clapton.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if you knew that or not.
I didn't know that. That's really nice of him. He's a great player.
Yeah.
He's done great. And he's a good singer, too.
Have you played with him at all?
I have. Jammed with him several times.
Yeah. He's a real purist to some degree.
Yeah.
Always doing, I mean... He puts out so many albums and so many of them are great. He did that one album, you probably were aware of it, A Salute to the Three Kings, where he played covers of all the...
Uh-huh.
That was a pretty cool record.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
So speaking of records, what's in your record collection?
Oh, you know, just all sorts of stuff. You mean old albums?
I know there's... West Montgomery Records, and you know, what else is in there? That some that obviously we'd all know, but what any really obscure ones that you just go, I can't believe this didn't get the kind of recognition that it should, but it's in my favorites.
Oh, there's there's a lot of Miles Davis records, and Chet Atkins records. There's George Jones, country singer.
Yeah,
a lot of Stevie Wonder. Joni Mitchell, James Taylor. I love James Taylor.
Wow, yeah.
So I've got his records, and Merle Travis. I like his stuff. Django Reinhardt, and then I have like Benny Goodman stuff and Glenn Miller, and I have I have some like show tune records, like The King and I and South Pacific and stuff like that.
Any Charlie Christian?
Yeah, I have a solo flight record. Yeah.
Right. And some Les Paul, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Got the Les Paul record.
Yeah, I remember you got the Les Paul Award. I think it was at the Hard Rock in New York. I was there to see that when Les Paul was around. That must have been exciting.
That was, yeah. That was quite an honor.
So coming out of Austin, obviously, you saw Stevie Ray Vaughan. Where was the first time you saw him, or have you known him? Had you known him for a long time?
No, I met him when he first came down from Dallas, and we met at Ray Henning's Heart of Texas Music Store. He had just quit playing with this band called Blackbird, and had come down to Austin to start playing. I think just doing odds and ends stuff, and eventually start playing with Paul Ray and the Cobras.
Right.
Yeah.
How many did you get to see him a number of times live?
Yeah, many times. Yeah. Yeah. I saw him around Austin a lot. Yeah.
Didn't get a chance to play with him, or did you?
Yeah. Yeah. We played a little bit. And then when he started doing Stevie Ray Double Trouble thing, I played a number of handful of shows with him.
Did you ever see Johnny Winter?
One time at the place called the Vulcan Gas Company.
Oh, sure.
I saw him another time, but the very first time I saw him when I was 13 or 14, and he wasn't really famous yet, but he was amazing.
Yeah, I know you you toured with, and you played on his, Steve Miller, who people think is from San Francisco, but he's not, he's from Texas.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Have you seen him lately?
I haven't talked to him lately.
Yeah.
But we played a lot of shows together.
So I guess you can't wait for this tour to start, because I know you live on playing live.
I like it. Yeah.
I'll just ask you a couple more things.
Sure.
So this record's coming out, and you're going to I hope you do a lot of press for it, because people need to hear this. Some of the stuff on here is amazing.
Well, thanks, Jenny. Yeah, we've been doing a lot. We've been doing a lot of stuff on it.
Now, when you do, what guitar magazines do you read? I know guitar player and then acoustic guitar, but do you read them all, or
you don't have
time, or what?
Oh, I guess I have time. I don't read a lot of them, really. I read the Vintage Guitar magazine every once in a while.
Now, do you have an ultimate guitar search? Are you looking for any particular instrument that you would like to add to the EGA collection?
No, not really. I think it's just a matter of trying to learn to play better with what you have.
Okay, so for the guitar freaks that are going to hear this, how many guitars do you have?
I got rid of a lot, so I would say maybe I have 20 to 25 or something.
So when you get rid of a guitar, what does that mean? You give it to somebody, you auction it, do you trade it? What do you do?
Sometimes I've done all those. Usually just try to, if I'm not giving it to somebody or doing it for a cause or something, I just try to sell it for basically what it's worth and not jack up the price or anything, you know.
And have people given you guitars over the years?
They have. Chet Atkins gave me a guitar.
Wow, that must have blown you away.
Yeah, it was nice. And my father gave me a Martin.
Right.
And my friend Bill Maddox gave me an old Stratocaster. I have a number of guitars that my friend Gary Schiff gave me a couple of guitars, actually.
How many do you take on tour with you?
Usually four or five.
Does it depend, or is it the same four or five?
Well, usually two or three Fenders and maybe a Gibson, and then maybe a one acoustic.
Well, I'll tell you that you'd be interested in this. I don't know if you had a chance to, if you even know about this, but a few months ago, one of the first shows I went to see, because somebody invited me, I didn't even know it was happening, was the kids of Ginger Baker and nephew of Eric Clapton and son of Jack Bruce were out on tour.
Wow. How is
the kids of Cream.
Wow.
And they did Disraeli Gears in its entirety.
Oh my goodness!
And then they Will Johns, who I guess is Glyn Johns' nephew. So that was the connection to Clapton there, because his, I don't know, that guy was telling me the whole thing. But the show was very interesting, I'll tell you that. But there must have been the typical, if you know the history of Cream, which I know you do, something must have happened, because after a few dates, Jack Bruce's son quit.
Oh, really?
So the two of them carried on, which, and again, it was something between him and Ginger Baker's kid, which I guess extends that legacy, because that was always their problem.
Yeah, right. Oh, geez. Yeah,
I did, because I did get a chance to interview Ginger Baker, and he always said he and Jack just never got along. Never.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Yeah.
Did you get a chance to see any of the Cream reunion dates when they did it?
No, I didn't see any of them. No, saw some of it on, you know, the recordings of it, but I didn't see it. Line.
And I guess you have seen the farewell, the original farewell.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah,
that was something. Yeah, sure. Wow. I guess we're going to look forward to the new records coming out and you back on the road. Where can I know you have a very healthy website. Who does you have somebody that does that for you? Because it's pretty robust.
A friend named John Bland does it.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you respond to inquiries that you get there, or fan letters?
Some of them I do. Yeah.
Well, look, I want to wish you a lot of luck, because I think this is some of the best stuff you've done, even though it's some of it's older. But whatever you did to make it magic, you did. I think you got two of the best things you've done in a while. You know, and I know you're going to have a successful tour, especially after this lockdown. But I want to wish you a lot of luck. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
You got it. My pleasure. Thank you.
You know, I'm a big fan.
Well, thanks for all your help over all the years. Okay. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, good luck with the records. We'll see you on tour.
Okay.
And thanks for everything.
Oh, got it. Well, hopefully we'll see you.
That's our conversation with Eric Johnson. As I mentioned, Eric has released two new albums, The Book of Making and Yesterday Meets Today. And when you order physical copies of The Book of Making and Yesterday Meets Today, you'll receive the keys to unlocking access to Takeouts, 5 unreleased songs and alternate versions of Good to Me and Sitting on Top of the World. Simply scan the QR code included in your order and then access the secret Takeouts page by using the password provided in the album packaging. You go to ericjohnson.com and all the info is there. Now, in lieu of charging for these mini guitar lessons, Eric would appreciate very much a donation made to your local food bank. And I'm adding a bonus myself with this recording of the Star Spangled Banner by Eric Johnson. So thanks for listening. Tell your friends, especially if they are guitar players. And you can find us on Facebook and at the website, therockpodcast.com. You can also send your comments to me at hello@therockpodcast.com. So long. Thank you.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.